It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 34 degrees under overcast skies. At the airport, they are back up to 10 miles of visibility, and they have southerly winds at 3 miles per hour. The weather service is calling for a 30% chance of rain today, mainly after 4, mostly cloudy skies for today, tonight, and tomorrow, with just a slight chance of rain throughout the period. Calm winds today becoming southerly to 5 miles per hour tonight, then turning to the west to 5 or so tomorrow. Look for mostly sunny skies on Friday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak City Council has made a deal with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to partner on repair of the St. Paul Harbor boat launch ramp downtown. The race for the mayor of Anchorage is going to a runoff. And a U.S. District Court heard arguments over whether to grant an injunction on a lawsuit the Mat-Su Borough is being faced with on its decision to remove books from the classroom.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Pressure is building on Israel to make the protection of civilians in Gaza a higher priority in its war against Hamas after a strike killed 7 food aid workers. Monday's attack took place at night. Today, the UN announced it was suspending nighttime operations for 48 hours in Gaza to assess security. Meanwhile, a senior U.S. official tells NPR that the U.S. is urging Israel not to proceed with a military offensive in Rafah until it has a detailed plan for protecting civilians in that southern Gaza city. A leading member of Israel's war cabinet is calling for new elections in September. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is resisting. We have more from NPR's Daniel Estrin in Tel Aviv.
Minister Benny Gantz is calling to set a date for early elections in September. In a speech, he said the Israeli public needed to renew confidence in the government. He also offered some veiled criticism of Netanyahu, calling on Netanyahu to give clear public support for the families of Israeli hostages held in Gaza. Netanyahu's Likud party said Gantz was playing small politics. Netanyahu has said elections would hurt Israel's war against Hamas. Gantz's call for elections is likely to shake up Israeli politics and could affect the trajectory of the war. Polls have shown if new elections were held, Gantz, a centrist, would lead Netanyahu by a wide margin. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
New insight today on how Americans feel about their presidential candidates. NPR's Domenico Montanaro reports on how those surveyed for an NPR PBS NewsHour Maris poll responded on the issue of access to abortion.
Given all that's happened on reproductive rights, there was near unanimity that getting an abortion should not be criminalized, speaking of things that they agree on. 84% say that women who have an abortion should not face penalties like fines or jail time. That included, by the way, 4 in 5 Republicans. That's not to say anything of support of various restrictions. I mean, we know that that's a huge gray area, not something that we asked about this time.
That's NPR's Domenico Montanaro reporting. Today, Disney shareholders gave CEO Bob Iger a vote of confidence. They rejected an effort by outside investor groups to change the company's direction. Details from NPR's Greg Allen.
Disney shareholders voted against giving activist investor Nelson Peltz and another investor, Blackwell's Group, the seats they wanted. Just before the vote, Peltz acknowledged that Disney's stock has rebounded in recent months under Iger's leadership, but he said he believed that's in part due to the pressure he's put on Disney's management. Part of the dispute is about Disney's streaming business, which has been losing money, which Iger says will turn a profit by the end of the year. After the vote, Iger thanked shareholders for putting an end to what he called a distracting proxy fight, so he can now work on creating value for investors. Greg Allen, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's City Council and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game are partnering to repair the St. Paul Harbor boat launch ramp in downtown. The council formally authorized the cooperative agreement last week during its regular meeting. According to city documents, the City of Kodiak and Fish and Game have been working together since 2021 to secure funding for the ramp renovation. The St. Paul Harbor boat launch ramp is one of the main launches in town for recreational boaters and sport anglers. City Manager Mike Tvenge says the project will be split into two phases, one for design and permitting, while the second involves construction.
Discussion we've had with Fish and Game is for them to maintain oversight of the construction phase, as well should the city agree to the design and matching funding of 25% of the anticipated construction costs.
That construction cost is currently estimated to be anywhere from $750,000 to $1.5 million. Although Tvenge says those numbers aren't concrete yet, as the design phase is still underway. Last week, the council unanimously approved the agreement between the city and Fish and Game's Division of Sport Fish, which will last for 20 years. That's how long the renovation project's life expectancy is. This agreement does not require the city to approve the launch ramp design, but will require the municipality to match a quarter of the funding to cover construction costs. According to city documents, the city's Ports and Harbors Department spent over $100,000 in 2022 to fund emergency repairs on the launch ramp. Harbor Master Dave Johnson says the ramp has been worn down by years of tides and power loading, which occurs when boat drivers use a lot of throttle to load their boats onto a trailer at the bottom of the ramp, causing a lot of wash. Johnson says he hopes the new ramp design will be deeper and include an increased pitch for boats loading and unloading from St. Paul Harbor boat launch. Fish and Game began soliciting proposals for the ramp renovations last month. Bids for engineering services are due on Thursday. Alaska lawmakers in the state house are giving a skeptical eye to Governor Mike Dunleavy's efforts to challenge the federal government in court. As reported by Alaska Public Media, the House Finance Committee voted 6-5 on Tuesday afternoon to zero out a $2 million budget increase requested by the governor for what he describes as statehood defense. Dunleavy has made challenging the Biden administration a key plank of his second-term platform. His administration has filed suit or joined lawsuits on a wide range of topics, from forest management and tailpipe emissions to firearms regulation and student debt relief. Lawmakers have set aside $11.5 million to fund the statehood defense effort since 2020. The legislature's head budgeter told the committee that the Department of Law had spent about $5 million on such cases and planned to spend at least that much over the next 3 years. Representative Andy Josephson, an Anchorage Democrat, proposed the cut. He provided a document outlining the state's spending on statehood defense cases.
I've sort of been rather public about my concerns with statehood defense and whether some of it is waste.
Cases asserting the state's ownership over navigable river and lake beds on federal lands make up about half of the statehood defense spending, according to the document Josephson provided. Republicans on the committee strongly opposed the cut, saying they were concerned federal rules and regulations imposed unfair burdens on Alaska residents. Fairbanks Republican Will Stapp said he objected to Environmental Protection Agency decisions limiting the use of wood stoves and fuel oil furnaces because of air quality concerns.
We are at a critical point in Fairbanks that if we lose another round of our meetings with the EPA, we will certainly have to be suing. And I want to make sure that there are available funds budgeted for statehood defense.
The amendment passed 6-5 with the support of Democrats, Independents, and the committee's two rural co-chairs, Independent Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham and Representative Neil Foster, a Nome Democrat. The committee's decision is far from final. The budget is expected to change significantly as it continues to move through the House and later to the Senate. The Dunleavy administration did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The state filed its latest federal complaint on Monday, accusing the Interior Department of missing deadlines on Freedom of Information Act requests related to the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge and the proposed Ambler Road. A U.S. District Court heard arguments on Monday over whether to grant an injunction in a lawsuit over the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough School District's decision to remove 56 books from school libraries. The American Civil Liberties Union and Northern Justice Project sued on behalf of 8 plaintiffs last November, claiming that the district's removal of library books without prior review was unconstitutional and violated the free speech rights of students. The lawsuit alleges that the district sought to suppress ideas they did not agree with, as many of the books contain LGBTQ or non-white characters. Savannah Fletcher is an attorney for the Northern Justice Project and represented the plaintiffs in court.
Those books should have never been removed in the first place, and it just highlights our point. We have over 50 books still off the shelves, and if we're going to determine the majority of those were never a problem in the first place, we're denying kids years of school where they can't access these classic and new books.
The plaintiffs filed the preliminary injunction early this year to have the books returned to school library shelves until the issue is resolved. The district's lawyer, John Patassin, argued that federal courts have repeatedly supported the rights of local school boards to determine what books are appropriate. Patassin declined an interview request after the hearing. The district initially received complaints from citizens about the 56 books that were removed last spring. A Library Citizens Advisory Committee was created and handpicked by school board members to review the books for obscene content. So far, the Matsu School Board has voted to approve the committee's recommendation to remove 3 books from all school libraries. Patassin said that books that were not deemed obscene had been returned to school library shelves. Leeson told both parties after the hour-long hearing that she would issue a decision quickly in the case. The 2 top candidates in Anchorage's mayoral race are preparing for a runoff election. Initial results posted late Tuesday night show Suzanne LaFrance with a slight lead over incumbent Mayor Dave Bronson. She has 36% of the vote to his 35%. There are still thousands of ballots left to be counted, but neither candidate is expected to push over the 45% threshold that would be needed to avoid a runoff. In a phone interview, LaFrance said she was surprised in a good way about the initial batch of results.
We've been focused on winning this race and preparing for a runoff. And so, you know, to see clearly early on that we're going to the runoff is really great.
The runoff election is currently set for May 14th, with ballots mailed out April 30th. Whoever is elected will serve a 3-year term as mayor. Bronson, only trailing LaFrance by roughly 600 votes, said by phone that his campaign was right where he wants it to be.
Right now, financially, we're in a great position to run a campaign for the next 4 or 5 weeks. We're very well prepared for that. Because we knew we would need the money for a runoff.
LaFrance and Bronson have gone up against each other in the past, but in the past it has been in the assembly chambers. LaFrance served as assembly chair for 2 years during Bronson's term as mayor. They often disagreed over policy, spending, and general governance, and the assembly regularly overturned Bronson's vetoes under LaFrance's tenure. Officials with the municipal clerk's office say they'll continue releasing election results every evening this week. So far, roughly 45,000 ballots have been counted. That's about 60% of the total ballots tallied during the city's last mayoral election in 2021. Further down the ballot, the 3 incumbents lead in Anchorage school board races. Also, all propositions are passing except 2, one to pay for cemetery renovations and the other to fund new public restrooms.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Alaska is the only state without a law school, forcing prospective lawyers to leave the state. A new program through Alaska Pacific University in partnership with Seattle University in Washington State hopes to change that. This fall, students can enroll in a dual law and Masters of Business Administration program without leaving Alaska. The dual degree qualifies graduates for jobs in business or law, or business and law. Lincoln Garrick is a program director for APU. He says some travel to Seattle is required through the hybrid program, but students won't have to relocate.
This type of delivery, we think, gives you kind of the best of both worlds. You don't have to uproot your life. Plus, you get that that deep peer network development that happens when you know, spend time in the same room. We should have access to this type of education as well as that.
Garrick says a big part of both law and business schools is networking. He says Seattle University offers an in-person component, and it was important to the university to keep a personal connection with students. He says another reason for the partnership is Seattle U has one of the premier Indian and tribal law schools in the nation. APU is working to become a tribal university. Garrick says it's important to have a partner who prioritizes diverse thinking. He says it's crucial to offer a law degree in-state because many students don't move back after they seek out-of-state schooling.
We should have access to this type of education as well as that maybe our homegrown professionals understand Alaska better than those that have just arrived.
Seattle University was ranked in the top 25 for national part-time law programs by the U.S. News last year. As charter schools remain the buzziest topic in Alaska education, the Kenaitse Indian tribe is considering founding one of its own. As KDLL's Riley Board reports, tribal members and school district officials met last week to flesh out the early details of a culturally grounded charter.
Every household in the Central Peninsula area received a postcard in the past couple weeks inviting them to weigh in on the tribe's plan to propose a charter school. Thursday evening, a couple dozen people are at the tribe's two-year-old educational campus in North Kenai to share their perspectives.
We definitely already know that it is going to have a very strong cultural language lens.
Teresa Smith is the tribe's education administrator. She says the school would serve students in grades K through 2, with plans to expand to older grades in the future. The tribe hopes to submit a letter of intent by the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District's August 1st deadline and submit a full proposal by October 1st. But at this point, the tribe is just gathering community input.
We know to have a successful application, we have to show that we have a number of folks that are interested and will put themselves in the lottery and sign up.
In Alaska, charters are public schools that have to seek approval from their local school district, then the state. If approved, Kenaitse's charter would open for the 2025-2026 school year. The school would most likely be based in the education campus building. That's an advantage other charter applications in the district haven't had. Some have faltered because of their inability to find a location. The campus currently houses the tribe's Head Start and early learning programs for children up to age 5. Smith says the upstairs area of the building is already outfitted with classrooms, which serves the tribe's after-school program. The space already has a commercial kitchen, playground, and other school amenities. Tonight's meeting is happening in the dining area.
It would just be scheduling, like any school, sharing this would be our lunchroom, the gymnasium, the playground, just be scheduling.
Smith says the tribe already has a good relationship with the school district through its Indigenous education programs in public schools. Tonight, Kyle McFall, the principal of Kenai Alternative High School, is working as a consultant to the tribe in its charter efforts.
Tonight is really just kind of the first night of getting together with the community and seeing what you guys are thinking. Obviously, the goal is to try and begin the application toward a charter school for Kenaitse in the community. But we're really early in that process, and so we just want to start with you guys in the community. What are you thinking about? What would you like to see in the school?
For the first part of the meeting, attendees have the opportunity to share their thoughts on comment cards and respond to prompts on posters around the room. Those prompts include curriculum ideas, school culture discipline model, and logistics like transportation or facility. Common themes and responses include Indigenous values, integration of elders into the classroom, and traditional or land-based learning. At one table, A group of tribal members say they're excited about the possibility of a school imbued with Dena'ina values and language, because for so long, those were discouraged in public schools.
I don't know, growing up in the regular borough school district, I never learned anything about my culture. And this would be something great that, like, I could enroll my children in this, and they could learn everything about the culture that I was never able to.
This is Suzanne Barber, whose two kids are currently a part of the tribe's early learning and Head Start programs. She says if the charter were up and running in a year and a half, she would enroll them.
I've tried to really get them immersed back into our culture because, I don't know, it's a tradition that was lost.
After the feedback period, Smith, McFall, and district officials take questions. Audience members ask how Dena'ina pedagogy will be preserved in the school and how hiring of staff will work. Soldotna Elementary School Principal Austin Stevenson explains.
The employees of this school will be employees of the school district. So all of their hiring practices, their negotiated agreements, labor agreements, contracts, compensation would all be consistent with what the teachers in the school district get.
Even though they would be district employees, he says, curriculum would be set by the Academic Policy Committee, a group of parents who make choices about school pedagogy. There's an option to sign up for that committee at the meeting. McFall concludes the evening by telling attendees they'll synthesize all of the feedback they received tonight, then send out a community interest survey to gauge potential enrollment numbers. The survey should come out by mid-April. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board met last night to continue an executive session begun last week on member conduct. The meeting was precipitated by comments made by Board President Brandy Hardy during a meeting last month, in which she shared a rumor that three interior state legislators' votes against a state education funding bill veto override were influenced by campaign donations. The lawmakers and some of their colleagues subsequently called for her to step down as president, which the board took public comment on prior to the start of their executive session last week. The board did not take any action following the conclusion of the session last night, but member Tim Doran read a board statement.
We strive to model good conduct and to live up to our norms, including to assume positive intent of each member and remain respectful at all times. Recently, we fell short of our standards.
The statement went on to say it was a failure of the entire board, for which it takes collective responsibility, and that it will move forward with renewed commitment to, quote, the professionalism and decorum that our community expects.
What higher interest rates, say car shoppers? I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute. New vehicle sales in the U.S. soared in the first 3 months of the year, up nearly 5% compared to a year ago. There was more inventory on lots, and the average selling price fell 3.5%. But Tesla's quarterly sales globally slumped for the first time in nearly 4 years, down almost 9%. It's facing strong competition in China from cheaper EVs built by local automakers. It's decision day for Disney's shareholders. They're voting on a challenge from activist investor Nelson Peltz, who wants to join the media conglomerate's board of directors. He has argued that changes, such as making fewer sequels, are needed to improve financial results. I'm Novosafa with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the third day of April, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 7:30. It will set again at 8:56, giving us 13 hours and 26 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 59 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 54 degrees set in 1926, and a record low was 10 degrees set in Chile 1985. Currently 34 degrees under overcast skies, southerly winds at 3 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility at the airport. They are calling for mostly cloudy skies for today, tonight, and tomorrow, with Light winds, calm winds today, becoming southerly about 5 tonight, and then turning to the west to about 5 tomorrow. Slight chance of rain throughout the whole period. For Friday, look for mostly sunny skies, high near 41, west winds to 25, could gust as high as 30 on Friday. Looking at our local tides, it looks like we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 4:45 p.m. this afternoon here on the east side and be 6/10 of 1 foot, followed by a high tide at 11:43 p.m. of 5.9 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 5:13 p.m. and be 1.2 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:53 p.m. of 10.4 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. A rabbit just ran by. Southwest winds to 20 knots, becoming southwest 30 tonight. 6 foot seas becoming 8 feet tonight. For tomorrow, look for southwest 25 and 9 foot seas. And for Friday, west 25, seas to 6 feet on our east side out to 15 miles. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight. Southwest 20 and 5 foot seas today, becoming southwest 25 tonight. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet throughout the period. And for Friday, west 25, seas to 5 feet. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers tonight. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. And the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session, also in the Borough Assembly Chambers, on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Both meetings are open to the public. Meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website, and contact the Borough Clerk's Office with any questions at 907-486-9310. They're kicking off the Audubon hiking season and celebrating the long migration of gray whales. Gray whales just got some good news recently. And the first is happening Saturday, April 6th, the second Saturday, April 27th. Cheer them on as they swim past Narrow Cape on their way to Baja to the Bering Sea. From Baja to the Bering Sea. Please no dogs due to migrating birds on Narrow Cape at the time. Meet your hike leaders at the Passagshack State Park restrooms at 10:30 a.m. Be sure to wear warm clothes, binoculars, rubber boots, bring lunch and water. If you have any questions, call Stacy Studebaker at 907-654-4881. But again, that is on April 6th. No dogs for the migrating birds on Narrow Cape. And meet your hike leaders at the Passagshack State Park restrooms, 10:30 a.m. Don't forget your warm clothes. And Stacy's number is 654-4881. And this Friday, it's coming up, Galley Tables, Call of the Wild. That's happening in the Kodiak Marketplace, 7 p.m. on Friday. Don't miss it. Things happening at the library include today's version of the Lego Club at 3:30 p.m. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Also today is the Zoom Trivia. All are welcome to join in the fun. It's easy to do, too. Just look for the link on the Kodiak Public Library's website under What's Happening at KPL. Again, that's at 6:30 p.m. tonight, Zoom Trivia. Thursday at 3 p.m. is the next Chess Club gathering. And don't forget, Canna's Elder Storytime is Friday at 10:30 a.m. Also, the animated movie Balto, highlighting the history of the Iditarod, will be shown on Friday. That's happening at 3:30 p.m. Runtime is about 78 minutes, and it's rated G. Friday, 3:30 p.m. And a special treat, Cindy Lou Eilard, author of Recess at 20 Below, will be at the library at 1 p.m. April 6th. That's sponsored by the Kodiak Island Borough School District. 1 p.m. at the library on April 6th. For more information about any of this stuff, contact the Kodiak Public Library at 907-486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.